Well, the trade story has been in the headlines around the world for the last few months. Thank Donald Trump for that. Trump tariffs are now part of our day-to-day discussions, especially here in South Africa. Donald McKay started a company called XA Global Trade Advisors 20 years ago. He was with Deloitte before then, and he never dreamed of becoming involved in this area until he did. Because once he was involved in it, he found out it was fascinating. It was something that kept him riveted. And thank goodness we've got a man who speaks truth to power to the way that McKay does, because we really need him right now. He is going to be talking at the next BizNews conference in March next year. I asked him in a in-depth interview that we had over the past few days, exactly where South Africa ranks in this big battle between the United States and China. In other words, are we an important player?
I mean, we're so far beyond China or the US or the EU. So let me perhaps describe it this way. The EU is our single biggest trading partner. We export about 22% of everything to the EU. And that 22% of our exports accounts for less than 0.5% of Europe's imports. If you look at the US, pre-Trump, US was kind of 7-8% of our exports. Africa's total imports into the US is less than 0.5% of their imports. So we're extremely small.
Yeah, that kind of puts it in perspective, hey? So we like a cork on the ocean. We're a price taker. If the big players, the giants, the great powers, the US, China, Euroland, if they decide they want to do something, well, we can squeak and squawk, but we're not going to change anything. And that's why we've got to really act smart. So I asked him, given that we're so small, this ability to maybe maneuver differently, the speedboat against the oil tankers that are the great powers, does it give us an advantage? Does he feel that we can actually make a good thing out of this?
I'm desperately wanting to be more optimistic than I am might be a good description. You've got to remember, though, South Africa's a tiny economy globally. There's only so much control we have over our own fate. So a good way to think of this would be, we want to be a good trading partner to other countries. I think our trading system in South Africa is heavily politicized. And it, of course, we've seen in the US what happens with a highly politicized system. That does worry me, because on balance, that tends to yield poorer outcomes than a less politicized system. There's continuous flow over. So you would recall, at the end of last year, I forget who the ANC politician was, who went on and on about renaming Sandton Drive, it's not the embassy, my apologies, the consulate is situated. So, you know, these sorts of things place a kind of burden on the average South African that doesn't need to be there. And South Africa politically has always kind of punched above its weight. But, you know, a few months ago, I wrote an article saying, at some point, the bigger guy is going to punch back, and we have to be careful. And now we have Donald Trump, and we've seen what that feels like. This is not to justify what Trump has done. I think that's terrible. But at the same time, we've set ourselves up to be in a weak position where we didn't need to be.
A little bit like a small dog yapping and yapping at a calm, relaxed, bigger dog who couldn't be bothered, and then one day is bothered.
Yes, yes. So we've made a lot of enemies, and I don't always know why. And some of the friends we're making make it difficult to have friends that can benefit us. So, you know, the most obvious is Iran most recently. You know, we do essentially no trade with Iran. Why are we spending political capital with Iran? But we do. And we do the same thing with Cuba and so on.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience.
Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research, and WeBuyCars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. but I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes, car, driving.
We buy cars, the easiest way to sell your car, by far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
Okay, so you're getting the picture. There's some guy decides that it's really important that he rubs the American noses in it by renaming Sandton Drive with something that he knows Americans are going to go ape about. And as a result of that, we lose another few thousand jobs. Ideology is expensive, but ignorance is even more. Anyway, so now we know that ideology is hurting South Africa, but is there a way of quantifying it that these bad friends that we've got, these people that we bring into our homes that the rest of the world don't want to deal with, that they're actually costing us?
So if you take Russia as an example, we've called ourselves non-aligned. I don't think anyone honestly believes we're non-aligned in the Russia situation. But if you take the value of our exports to Russia, we export more to Eswatini than we do to Russia. If you take all of the BRICS countries, the expanded BRICS, and you just take out China and India, you look at all the rest, our exports to Zimbabwe are bigger than our exports to all of the others combined, but Brazil and everyone. So I find it weird. It's not clear to me what the strategy is in the groupings we're in. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be part of these groupings, but we've got to think very carefully what the upside to being in there is. That's kind of the one leg. But the other side is, what is the cost you pay? So what is the cost that we end up paying when we align ourselves with less attractive partners in the world? And that becomes very hard to quantify because it's very often the trade or investment that didn't happen. But we've got to kind of think, are we going to be principled, which I think doesn't tend to work out into the long term? Are we going to focus on our own interests, which I could understand that was kind of the Henry Kissinger perspective. It's just focus on your interests. But it's not obvious to me that we're really doing either of those. And so the result is we seem to be kind of blown by the wind, and that makes us a unpredictable partner to be in business with.
And that's not a partner that you want to be in business with, somebody who says, oh, they'll deliver tomorrow, and then you're waiting at the end of the week and they still haven't delivered. Or when they finally do, they say, oh, we want more than what we quoted you. Those are unpredictable and unreliable partners. The most important part of any human being, and indeed any country, is just be reliable, just be straight, just be honest, and actually do what's right for your own people. And the problem with ideology is it's a slippery slope. If you think about it, the person who can convince you that their ideology is right, in other words, the best orator, the one with the deepest pockets, the one who's prepared to give you perhaps a little more, let's call it corruption, because that's really what it is, they are the ones who actually hold sway over the national interest as a whole. It really is an issue where dark forces start to take control, and something that needs to be looked at. We have become, as you'll hear from Donald Mackay, what is called a lobby economy. Those who lobby or whose voices are listened to most get to actually make the rules.
So we absolutely have become a lobby economy. And lobby economies at their heart don't function well because it's a perpetual overriding of market signals to accomplish something. So everyone got very upset when we found out about the Guptas and them wanting SAA to cancel certain routes, etc. And of course, that was connected to a bribe. But if you took the bribe out of it and you put another company's name in there, we see fundamentally the same thing. So we spend a lot of time studying court cases, and it is astonishing how many times in a dispute you will find out that Company A had been investing lots of time with a particular minister to get an outcome. I'm not suggesting they were bribing them, but what has happened is the transparency is so poor that we have no idea. what goes on. And so our policies become dictated by the very large companies in the country. And, you know, that's not really a secret to anyone, but it's also why the economy remains as concentrated as it is, with very large companies remaining dominant. Maybe some of the names have changed, but ultimately the economy hasn't in any way, you know, just become deconcentrated in the last 30 years.
Supporting the status quo. He then gave an example of how this has worked in practice with the mini steel mills. Many of them are through politically connected individuals, and they're about to destroy the town of Newcastle.
Yeah. So the lobbying here has truly gotten out of control. So what happened is around 2012 or 2013, the lobbying started with Minister Patel at the time to impose some controls on exporting. And so was born a system called the price preference system, which is essentially a program that says, if I have scrap steel and I want to export it, I first have to offer it to the domestic industry at a 30% discount. And then if nobody wishes to buy it at that discount, I can then export it. But then what happened is, over time, the lobbying increased. And we ended up in, I think it was 2022, we ended up with Treasury also imposing an export duty on scrap. So now, if you couldn't sell it locally at the 30% discount, if you exported it, you would now pay a 20% export duty. It was never meant to be that way. The one was meant to replace the other. But here is where the secret lobbying happened. And all of this came out in a set of court papers. We've published a report on it. We've identified who the people were that were doing the lobbying. Because the effect of that has been quite profound. So there's a value transfer that we calculated at about 8.5 billion rand a year from generators of scrap metal, the factory, Transnet, whoever, to the consumers of scrap metal, these mini mills. And by the way, a new one is about to open in Nigel, so there'll be 11 of them. And coupled to this, you have the IDC providing friendly finance. We don't know at what price, but finance. So the IDC's exposure to the mini mill sector, according to Minister Patel, about 2 years ago, was 14 billion rand.
So just scheme this through quickly so you understand it. You go and steal railway lines. You sell the railway lines to a mini mill. The mini mill takes that scrap, which it's impossible for you to export it because they've said you got to offer it locally at a 30% discount. Or now if you export it, you've got to pay a 20% duty on it. So they then take that scrap and convert it at a price that is impossible for anybody else to compete at. And there's an 8.5 billion rand transfer to those mini mills. And who owns the latest one that is opening in Nigel? China. Well, there is a lot going on here. Just read the court papers, or better still, go and watch the interview, what we call the director's cut, the full interview on BizNews TV. Can be accessed on biznews.com/briefing. Until tomorrow, cheerio.